ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the 7th canto, chapter 7th, text 18th. जन्माद्यः षडिमे भावा दृष्टादेहस्य नात्मनः फलानामिव वृक्षस्य कालिनेश्वरमूर्तिना। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as the fruits and flowers of a tree in due course of time undergo six changes, birth, existence, growth, transformation, dwindling and then death, the material body, which is obtained by the spirit soul under different circumstances, undergoes similar changes. However, there are no such changes for the spirit soul. Purport. This is a very important verse in understanding the difference between the spiritual soul and the material body. The soul is eternal, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyah ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. For the soul there is never birth nor death. Nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing, undying and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. The spirit soul is eternal, being freed from waste and change, which take place because of the material body. The example of a tree and its fruits and flowers is very simple and clear. A tree stands for many, many years, but with the seasonal changes, its fruits and flowers undergo six transformations. The foolish theory of modern chemists that life can be produced by chemical interactions cannot be accepted as truth. The birth of a human being's material body takes place due to a mixture of the ovum and semen, but the history of birth is that although the ovum and semen mix together after sex, there is not always pregnancy. Unless the soul enters the mixture, there is no possibility of pregnancy, but when the soul takes shelter of the mixture of the body, takes birth, exists, grows, transforms, and dwindles, and ultimately it is vanquished. The fruits and flowers of a tree seasonally come and go, but the tree continues to stand. Similarly, the transmigrating soul accepts various bodies which undergo six transformations, but the soul remains permanently the same. Ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul is eternal and ever existing, but the bodies accepted by the soul are changing. There are two kinds of soul: the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead, and the Individual Soul, the Living Entity. As various bodily changes take place in the Individual Soul, different millenniums of creation take place in the Supreme Soul. In this regard, Madhvacharya says, Shad vikara sharirasya na vishnustad gatasya cha tad adhinam shariram cha nyatva tan mamatam tijet. Since the body is the external feature of the soul is not dependent on the body. Rather, the body is dependent on the soul. One who understands this truth should not be very much anxious about the maintenance of his body. There is no possibility of maintaining the body permanently or eternally. Antavant ime deha nityas yoktaha sharirenaha. This is the statement of Bhagavad Gita. The material body is antavat, perishable, but the soul within the body is eternal. Nityas yoktaha sharirenaha. So Lord Vishnu and the individual souls who are part and parcel of Him are both eternal. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. Lord Vishnu is the chief living being, whereas the individual living beings are parts of Lord Vishnu. All the various grades of bodies, from the gigantic universal body to the small body of an ant, are perishable, but the super soul and the soul, being equal in quality, both exist eternally. This is further explained in the next verses. Hare Krishna. Just as the fruits and flowers of a tree in due course of time undergo six changes, birth, existence, growth, transformation, dwindling and then death, the material body which is obtained by the spirit soul under different circumstances undergoes similar changes. However, there are no such changes for the spirit soul. Hare Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada was once having a conversation with Swarupa Damodar Maharaj, and so he was asking that how did life come about? What do the scientists say about it? So Damodar Maharaj said that, well, the scientists say that the life has come from chemicals. So Srila Prabhupada said, oh, well, they are saying that life has come from chemicals. And what do they further say? And he said that the scientists will be able to prove in the laboratories that life has come from chemicals. So Srila Prabhupada said, look how these scientists are speaking. They are speaking, life has come from chemicals in the past tense, and they will be able to prove it in the future. What about the present? That they don't know. So he's saying this is cheating. This is cheating. How the scientists are cheating the common people to accept a theory like this by using a jugglery of words, saying that life came from chemicals and we will be able to prove it in the future that life has come from chemicals. But at the present, there's no such proof. So Prabhupada said that, what do you see in your day-to-day life? Life coming from chemicals? No. Just like if there is an ant, how does it come? It comes from another living ant. You don't find dirt producing ants. Or you find a child who's being born, is being born from a living father and mother. You don't find him being, coming out from some kind of chemical combinations. We don't see that. So Prabhupada said that in a day-to-day experience, we find that actually life is coming from life. This is our current experience, but still the scientists dare to say something like, life has come from chemicals and in the future they will be able to prove it. So this goes against logic. And in 1973, when this conversation was being recorded, we can understand the potency of Srila Prabhupada, who at that time, nearly 35 years ago, was able to think so sharply and present the Vedic conclusions so sharply, and not only present the Vedic conclusions but apply it to the modern scenario to disprove the false theory is denying God's existence. This is the glory of Srila Prabhupada, that how he did it with such pinpointed precision. And Srila Prabhupada was further discussing, and he said that, well, what do the scientists say? And then Damodar Swarup Maharaj was telling that, yes, they give away awards to other scientists because they have promising to create life in test tubes, and they are doing it also. They are able to create life in test tubes, a baby in test tube. They call it test tube babies. He says, what is that? Test tube babies? Well, nature is already doing it within the womb of the mother. Then why do you take credit for creating something which is already being done in nature? So he said, well, that's the way it is. Nobel Prize has been given for them. So he said, no, this is very bad. So he quoted a verse, Shwa vid vara hostra kharai samstuti pumsa pashu. He said, just like people who are just like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, they take great pleasure in honoring other human beings who are just like dogs, hogs, camels and asses. And they give them Nobel Prizes. So then another devotee, Brahmanand Prabhu, said that this Nobel Prize, this prize has been named after a great scientist who invented a dynamite. So Prabhupada said, dynamite. He said he created great misfortune, and later on he has left money to create further misfortune in this world. So this is the nature of this world, that the scientists are proposing theories which are atheistic theories, which are may not convince people wholly that it is a truth, but it is sufficient to shake the faith on the existence of God. It creates a doubt in the minds of people, and on that basis people can continue with their sense gratification and go ahead with their materialistic pursuits on the pretext that maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, and on that basis. So therefore it is our endeavor while we preach and also in our own life to be thoroughly convinced about how the Vedic conclusions are perfect. And there is no such thing as life coming from chemicals. And here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks about this, that how life is coming from life. And he speaks that how Sri Krishna is such an eloquent speaker that he, within one, two lines, he's given the complete understanding of how the soul resides within this body. And he says, Dehino smenyatha dehe, na jayate mrete va kadachin. He says, just in two lines, he has given us the understanding that how the soul resides within the body, separate from the body. And the soul has different characteristics from the body. So we can see that in the life of a sadhaka, it's all about trying to understand Krishna and trying to understand ourselves. God realization and self realization. And the path or the obstacle on his path of reaching that goal is ignorance, which is an obstacle. The obstacle is ignorance, isn't it? I mean, we're trying to understand who we are and who God is, but the ignorance is a big obstacle. And therefore, we have to take shelter of Krishna to overcome this obstacle. To understand who we are itself requires mercy. We cannot by our own understand that. We need mercy. Therefore it is said that utkramantam sthitam vapi bhunjanam va gunanvitam vimudananu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshusha. That how the body is changing and how the soul is transmigrating cannot be seen by muda. But a person who is an educated person, who is trained up in that knowledge, can actually see that. And in the Gita it is said, yatanto yoginas chayanam pashyanti atmanyavastitam yatanto apikratatmano nanu pashyanti chetasah. That a yogi who has controlled his senses and who is cultivating discipline in his life can actually come to understand what is his body, what is his soul. He has to be disciplined and he has to control his senses. Achetasah, a person who has not controlled his senses cannot understand this fact, or who is just engaged in sensual activity cannot understand this aspect of the soul. So here we can see that Prahlad Maharaj is just 5 years old. 5 years old means what? First standard, isn't it? First standard student. So the first standard student is teaching the other first standard students the science of the soul. So while I was trying to prepare on this topic, I was thinking, science of the soul, I have to speak on science. It's a very basic topic. Devotees might have already heard a lot, isn't it? But I was thinking, if Prahlad Maharaj, being the first standard student, a small boy, can teach the science of the soul to the students of the first standard, then why should we not discuss this very important topic? But generally, our experience is when we give lectures or something, we find these five-year-old kids, you know, all they can understand is in the lecture is their crayons. When we are talking about philosophy, all they're doing is drawing, painting and things like that. They can't. Even when you speak some stories, they are busy in their artwork. That's all. They sit in the first bench and what they're doing is coloring. But here we can see Prahlad Maharaj is not only understood, but he is having the guts to actually preach this philosophy to his students. Why? How is it that Prahlad Maharaj, being 5 year old, could have understood this? So, because he has received the mercy. To understand the soul, you need mercy. You need knowledge. And knowledge is achieved through mercy. Therefore, in the Gita, it is explained, Tesham satata yuktanam Tesham aham samudharta mrityu samsara sagarat bhavami na chirat partha mama veshita chetasa. Krishna says that I will protect you, I will deliver you from this ocean of birth and death. Isn't it? He says that. And how does he do that? By giving knowledge. So one can be saved and protected from the cycle of death through knowledge. And knowledge is acquired through mercy. So here is, we can see that how Prahlad Maharaj could understand this. It is in the fifth standard. And great scientists cannot understand, who are proposing this, you know, chemical evolution theory, chance theory. They are great learned scholars. Professor Kotovsky, who was the head of the Indian religious studies in Russia. And Prabhupada asked him, so what do you understand about the soul? He says, when the body dies, everything is finished. So this is what it takes. It requires mercy. Just recently, you know, some of our devotees had gone to Silvasa. And there, he was telling a very interesting incident. That while they were just conducting a little research, they found out that in the 10th standard students, the result of the 10th standard was everyone failed. All the students failed. There was not 0% result. Not 1% passed in Silvassa. I said, really? What an astonishing thing. How did that happen? So then he said, most probably it is because of the government policy that liquor is given subsidy. Beer is available for 20 rupees there. All over in India, you get beer for around 80 rupees a bottle. And there it is 20 rupees. And water is available for 12 rupees. So you can understand, isn't it, what the students are doing. So how can we expect, you know, that this kind of education be given to the students if they are not trained up to control their senses? It's not possible. Therefore, students must be, from childhood, be trained up in these principles. And we find that in the schools, what is happening is the worst kind of degradation. Worst kind of degradation takes place in schools. Children unlearn many things. I mean, they get degraded more than what they gain. All the kind of bad association is available in schools. So is it really worthwhile, you know, for the children to go through this modern education system? It's a big question, actually. So Srila Prabhupada always emphasized that children must be given this education from childhood. So there is a wonderful pastime, which coincidentally last time also, last week it was discussed, the churning of the ocean of milk. There are wonderful similarity between this topic which is going on and the topic of churning the ocean. Why? Because Vigna Vinashaka Narsingadev Bhagavan, Lord Narsingadev, is known as Vigna Vinashak, is a remover of obstacle on the path of his devotees. And because Prahlad Maharaj had taken shelter of Lord Narsingadev, he was freed from all illusion. And this pastime of Samudra Manthan is also very relevant, because this pastime exclusively gives many incidences where the Lord has manifested his powers to remove his devotees' obstacles. So, we will just go through some of the very important teachings in this pastime. As you know that it started off with an offense of Indra to the Durvasa, to the sage, mystic yogi, who was not even a devotee. Durvasa was not even a devotee, and he was offended, and the subsequent reaction was that the demigods were driven out of their kingdom. So eventually they took shelter of Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, and they asked that how can we be delivered from a situation. So Lord Krishna told them that you must churn the ocean of milk and put your ingredients and things like that, and he tells him the formula how to churn the ocean. So here is a very important understanding which we can get, that for the Lord to do anything is not difficult. He could have just, you know, given them back their kingdom, isn't it? Is it very difficult for the Lord? But the Lord told them to engage in practical service. So also the formula for overcoming the obstacle of ignorance is to engage in practical devotional service. So this is a very important thing. So the Lord doesn't like his devotees to just be simply comfortable and lazy. Therefore, it is recommended that devotees come out of the comfort zone. There is a tendency to just relax and take it easy. But actually, devotees have to be engaged, somehow come out of the comfort zone and engage in practical devotional service. Just like Lord Ram, for that matter. Now, when he reached the southern tip of India, he could have just built a bridge himself. He could have just told the ocean to split and the ocean could have given him way. But why didn't he do that? Why did he engage all the monkeys in practical service? Because that's how he wants his devotees to be engaged in Krishna's service. And it's explained in the Gita, just like Purnachandra Prabhu, he was explaining that when you do karma, when you do work, then the knowledge is there within the work. And when you engage in work, the knowledge is revealed to you. Just like when there is a lotus, if you cut the lotus along the cross section, you know, you'll find these threads. The lotus has got these threads along the stem. So similarly, when you are engaged in karma, within the karma, there is knowledge. So when you engage in karma, you get jnana. What kind of karma? Krishna karma, of course. So knowledge is revealed to you. So how it is? That is revealed by Krishna, of course. He says, Tesham satate yuktanam bhajitam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayandite. That for one who is engaged in my service, Krishna says, I give them the intelligence by which they can understand this principle. Just like recently, you know, one devotee from America, Yugal Kishore Prabhu, he was telling us a practical incident which took place. Like for example, in New Vrindavan community, a gentleman just stepped in, an American young boy. He just took darshan and he was on his way back. And generally at that time, there was not many people and not much of guest reception as we have here, Sankirtan Prabhu and here receiving the guests. So he just took his stroll around the temple and he was going out. So while he was going out, he met a devotee and he was hammering some nails into the cart. He was doing some carpentry work. So he just requested him that, can you please come here and help me drive this nail into this thing? So then he came and he helped him. So he hammered the nail in the wood and this devotee started appreciating, oh, what wonderful service you've done. Amazing, amazing. Can you do one more nail? So he took another nail and he again hammered and he started appreciating. Amazing, you know, you're such a great, you're doing such amazing service. Can you put one more? And after he did a substantial service, he then gave him a lot of prasad and treated him very well, nicely. And then he became a devotee. He felt that he needs to come back. The devotee said that he felt a bonding, he felt appreciation for his service. And he connected immediately with that devotee. And he felt that, he said later on, that when I left that community, I was to leave, never to come back. But I thought now, after this incident, I should come back. Because there is some person who is kind to me, who showed me some love. And he became a devotee subsequently. And he revealed that who was that person who was doing the carpentry work? He was Jayananda Prabhu. And who was the person who became a devotee? He was Jayapataka Maharaj. So a practical service of hammering a nail on a wood, if one engages in it and if a devotee is overseeing that thing and just encourages him, it can make devotees. This is practically, we have seen this happen in our movement. And we see the glory. As you were saying that, you know, the ISKCON, you cannot imagine ISKCON without Jayapataka Maharaj. What an amazing devotee. In fact, the Guinness Book of World Records has his name in it for being the world's largest traveler. There's no one in the world travels as much as Jayapataka Maharaj. He flies, keep flying. So much so that British Airways has given us statistics on his life that he spends 5.5 months in the air flying. And 6.5 months he's on the land. His disciple told me this. 5.5 months he's just flying in the air. That's his life. So much for preaching. He's dedicated his life for preaching. How has this happened? Through practical service. So therefore, to be practically engaged in some service is a very important lesson which you can learn. Which will, like, just like, you know, there's a devotee, Vishal, who was in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was coming to the temple, and he had a habit of quoting shlokas. Every time Prabhupada would come and he would, Dehi nosmenyatha, dehi komaram. So Prabhupada would look at him, and after some time again he would come in front of Prabhupada and then he would chant a verse, you know, Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. And Prabhupada would look at him. And after some time, Prabhupada became a little frustrated with him, and he said, as soon as he started quoting a verse, he said, why don't you do something practical? There's some water lying here, why don't you clean it up? Prabhupada liked some practical service to be done. So therefore, one must engage in practical service. So a very important principle that not only for sadhakas, but also as preachers, when we preach, to actually give some service to people so that they can be, to get real, really relish the taste of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gives an example, just like when you eat, what happens? You get strength. And when you get strength, if you don't do work, then you will not get an appetite again. So also when one does sadhana, when we chant, one has to do practical service because chanting gives you spiritual strength to do devotional service. But if you don't serve, then you will not have an appetite. You won't feel the need to chant again, to chant more. So therefore, to keep our enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness and to keep advancing, one has to increase one's dedication to the movement. Which means that to practically go and take some service and not just wait for service to be given. One has to step out of the comfort zone and ask and demand service. So the Lord, he told the demigods one very important principle. He said that when you are churning the ocean, you should be patient, you should not experience any anger, and you should be entering into an agreement with the asuras. And be satisfied with whatever you get. As you churn, there will be various gifts coming out. And as the gifts come out, some you will get, some you will not get. So when you get it, be satisfied. Don't be greedy for more. And if you don't get it, don't be frustrated. And enter into an agreement with them. If they demand something, give it. So here is a very important instruction, a practical advice. Practical advice to the demigods. So also we must remember that this is an advice for the demigods who are actually not pure devotees. Now they are karma mishra bhaktas. But for us who are aspiring for pure devotional service, the instruction is na dhanam na janam na sundari. Not wealth, not beautiful women, or not followers. So therefore this is a very important principle, and we have to remember that. But this practical advice could be used in preaching. When we preach, there are situations where we may have to compromise, when we have to be satisfied with whatever comes our way and be tolerant. Like for example, one Srila Prabhupada was going in an aircraft and one of his disciples was also there, and it was a non-smoking zone. And while he was there, that person was smoking, so this devotee disciple went and told him that, please, could you stop your smoking? So he stopped smoking and again started smoking. So the disciple, again he went, he thought that Prabhupada may be a little disturbed by the smoking, and again he went to him and he said, please don't smoke, this is a non-smoking zone. So again he stopped, and again after some time he started. So third time when this disciple was going to stop him, Prabhupada said, why didn't you just stop it? If you can't tolerate it, then what is the difference between you and them? We are devotees. We have to tolerate sometimes. So therefore, sometimes we may, in our practical day-to-day life, we may be faced with such situations where, we have to maybe compromise. Not for ourselves, but for the service of Krishna. So therefore, we have to we can learn very important lessons. Like for example, sometimes we may have to agree with the demons on certain issues in order to get our work done. Otherwise, we may bring a bad name for the movement. So, Shukdev Goswami, he then later on speaks a verse. He says, Viloki Vignesha Vidhim Tadishwaro Durant Viryo Vidatabi Sandhihi Kritva Vapu Kachapam Adbutam Mahat Pravishatoyam Girim Ujjahara. So, he says, Viloka Vignesha Vidhim Tadishwaro. So, as the pastime goes on, the demigods start churning the ocean. They get the mountain and the mountain falls on them. And many of the demons die. Somehow the demons again pick it up along with the help of the Lord who comes on the Garuda. Picks up the mountain, puts it on his back, on the Garuda's back, and takes it into the ocean and drops it there. So the demigods, they bring Vasuki, wrap him around the mountain. And they start pulling the Vasuki, they start churning. So as they keep doing it, the whole mountain, because there's no support, sinks into the ocean and disappears into the ocean of milk. So at that time, Shukdev Goswami is speaking this verse. Viloka Vignesha Vidhim Tadishwaro. So Vignesha, this word Vignesha means, it refers to Lord Ganesh also. His name is Vignesh. It also refers to Lord Narsingadev, who's in this pastime, which means that a person who removes the obstacles. So some acharyas explain that it refers to Lord Ganesh, who's saying that they didn't take my permission, they didn't take my blessings before they, took this endeavor. And some people say, or rather it is translated in Srila Prabhupada's books, Vignesh means by the will of providence, by the will of the Lord, this obstacle has come, that the mountain has sunk in the ocean. And the Lord decides now to incarnate as a turtle in order to lift the mountain. Lift the mountain like that. So it's a very important lesson we learn that all the obstacles, including the ignorance, which is there in the life of a devotee, is also an obstacle which is arranged by Krishna. It's an obstacle which has been arranged by Lord. So all the obstacles in this world are actually not coming by chance, but it is an arrangement of Krishna. That's why it is said by Dalai Lama that sometimes when you don't get what you want, it is a wonderful stroke of luck. To always get what you want is a little risky, because you may get into the habit of, you know, getting everything, and then sometimes when you don't get, it leads to a lot of frustration. So therefore, we have to be very careful that we do not get over ambitious, and control our senses at all time. And obstacles actually are a great blessing, because they make us humble and they make us struggle. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, the more effort you put to gain something, to learn something, the better it is remembered, and it is for a longer time it stays, it is retained. Something you learn quickly, you may forget it quickly. Therefore, a struggle is very, very important. Just like you know, these days modern people, they don't have the habit of doing physical work. Most of the time they're just lazing around, they're watching television, or they're using vacuum cleaners or things like that. They don't want to do physical work. But what happens? That nature forces them to work. How? Nature straps around 30-40 kilos on their body, they become fat. And then they have to carry that load wherever they go. Isn't it? Or then they feel, okay, I'm putting on weight, you know, let's go to the gym, you know. And then they go to the gym. And then nature forces them to do the same work which they would do otherwise normally. And you don't want to jog or you don't want to walk. And then in the gym you see the same kind of exercises. They're jogging or they're walking or they're, you know, doing things which traditionally any people would do at home. So that is the way nature is. You cannot make shortcuts. Nature will give you the quota of struggles in order to become purified, to achieve the main goal, that is Krishna consciousness. So therefore, it is said that we have to be careful. Especially talented people, it is explained, they get everything what they want because they're talented. But there is a risk in that. Because as old age sets in, when the talents will be gone, it may lead to so much frustration that they may even give up Krishna consciousness. Because struggles prepare you for old age. It is said there are two good friends of a conditioned soul. What is that? Old age and death. Because it humbles everyone. And struggles in life prepares you for the old age. So that you are in a situation where you are helpless, at that time you have sufficiently struggled to get the knowledge which will get you through the sufferings and help you enter into the transcendence. So finally, the mountain sinks and the Lord incarnates as Kurma, as a turtle, as a tortoise. And Jayadeva Goswami, he says in this poem of his, Kshitir iha vipulatare tishtati tava prishthe dharani dharana kina chakra garishte. That the Lord took the mountain on his back and has explained that the rock is made up of gold, Mandarachal. It's not a stone mountain, it is a gold mountain. And this mountain, generally mountains are not smooth edged. The mountains generally have, you know, spikes, spiky, it's very rough edges. So all those spiky surface of the mountain, the bottom of the mountain with spikes and gold spear-like lances-like edges of the mountain was placed on the back of Kurma, and it was being, you know, rubbed on the back of Kurmadev. Because the demigods were busy pulling. You know, they were not seeing, oh, the Lord is running, we should be careful. No. They were like just pulling away to glory. Because they were interested in getting the nectar. So So they were not cautious that, you know, we should be careful, the Lord is underneath, he should not be inconvenienced. No, they were just pulling away. And as the pulling was going on, to and fro, back and forth, and clockwise, anti-clockwise, it was producing a tremendous friction on the back of the Lord with a rough-edged mountain, gold mountain, that it is explained in this verse that it produced a mark, a permanent mark on the back of the Lord. Kind of a mark. And that is a kind of a testimony that the Lord took this incarnation for removing the obstacles on the path of the devotee. This testimony is explained. So this is also a very important lesson. There are so many people who claim that they are gods. You know, this is a test. That it may not be a mountain, but you put a small rock on their back and just keep rubbing it for some time. And you see how they feel. If they're still alive, yes, they may be God. If they're not alive, then, you know, all the best. So the thing is, this is actually a test to see that, because there's very common sight today. There's so many gods coming up. In the trains and all, you find, you know, so photos of husband and wives, pictures with glow on the back of their heads, you know, giving blessings. So it's an unfortunate situation that people are ordinary human beings are claiming that they are gods. So the Lord, through this incarnation, is showing that how powerful he is and how capable he is to lift the burden of anarthas in the life of a sadhaka. It's quite related. Our anarthas are also like a mountain. It's very difficult. But the Lord, if he just surrendered to Krishna, it's very easy for him to lift it. It's not a problem for him, but we must surrender to him. But unfortunately, instead of surrendering to Krishna, we surrender to everything else. We surrender to our knowledge, we surrender to our circumstance, we surrender to our talents, we surrender to so many. Just like Bhakti Vikas Maharaj was telling that in an air flight, I was traveling by flight and all of a sudden the aircraft started shaking. There was bad weather. And there was a husband and wife sitting in the aircraft. So there was an announcement that fasten your seat belts, it's bad weather. And the plane was going up and down and up and down. So Maharaj was just chanting on his beads, trying to take shelter of the Lord. And he just saw the couple there. And the wife became very frightened and she held on to the hand of the husband as if like he could protect her. Like, and he was telling that, you know, I mean, if the plane were to crash, what can the husband do? Both are doomed, isn't it? But you see how conditioned soul takes shelter of fallible soldiers. It's a fact. People take shelter of everyone else but God. So this is an unfortunate situation. So it is not very difficult for the Lord to give us deliverance from our past sinful activities. Only that we have to take shelter. In fact, Krishna says in the Gita, Gam avishish bhutani dhare mayam aham ojasa pushnami aushadi sarvaha somo bhutva rasatmaka. And what to speak of a mountain, Gam avishich bhutani, that I am entering into the planets and I am keeping the planets floating in the sky, in the ether, by my power. And what to speak of the planets, the whole universe is actually said to be like a mustard seed on the head of Ananta. The whole Brahmanda is like a mustard seed, like an egg. Or not an egg, it's like a mustard seed. And when Ananta moves like this, the mustard seed also on his head, he hardly feels the presence of it on his head. This is the infinite power, the glory of the Lord. But still we fail to take shelter of Krishna like that. And we see that how in this pastime, Prahlad Maharaj had taken complete shelter of Lord Narasingha Dev, who was also Vigna Vinashak. So the churning was going on and Vasuki was being pulled left, right, left, right, left, right. And the surprising question which may come in the minds of the people, that how is it that Vasuki was not tearing apart? You know, generally you have a rope and you keep pulling. There's so much of friction, isn't it? And the mountain is made of gold and it's all spiky edged, rough surface. How is it that Vasuki was not being Of course, snakes are pretty strong. I mean, you get leather belts made of snake skin, isn't it? You have leather belts which are made up of skin. Special ones you get of snake leather. Very tough. Very, very tough. Very strong. But still, if you use a snake to wrap him around a mountain, to churn an ocean, I mean, and all the 33 crore demigods on one side. I mean, it's not that human beings, two people pulling, no. 33 crore demigods on one side and all the demons on another, and the Lord is also churning with the demigods. Okay, and he's pulling. He's pulling as a mountain. So how is it that Vasuki didn't tear about Surya? Explain. It is because the Lord was empowering the demons, the demigods and the snake through the various modes and strengthening them to perform the task of the journey. And that's how he was tolerating this punishment, severe punishment of being wrapped around a mountain for this purpose. So, eventually the churning took place and various ingredients, or rather gifts, started coming out. So, a cow came out, Kamdhenu cow came out, horse came out, and Lakshmi came out. And also, the most important thing, the first thing which came out was the poison. Poison came out. And at that time, everyone runs to Lord Shiva for protection. Everyone runs to him. And they seek shelter. And including the Lord, just like if you have, it is explained when the poison came out, the poison was so dangerous. The poison was so dangerous that it had no antidote. The poison which came out had no antidote. Therefore, there was no cure for it. There was no solution in this world. Generally, in Ayurveda or in some kind of medicine books, there are certain cures. Like if you are bitten by a snake, you know, there is a cure for it. You take a medicine, there is an antidote. But this halahal vish, it is explained, was such a poison which there was no antidote. So therefore, the demigods who had the power to overcome all poisonous effects, had to run, had to flee. Because the poison was spreading in all three directions. In the sky, in the land, and in the water. Just like Bhopal gas tragedy which took place, you know, the gas started leaking out. And what could the people do? I mean, they can just escape, isn't it? So like that, all the demigods started running, and it was headed by whom? Lord Krishna himself. Ajita was leading them to Lord Shiva. It's quite surprising. Why did the Lord lead the demigods to Lord Shiva? What is the reason? So the people, sometimes there may be a conflict, there may be a kind of dilemma that who's supreme, Lord Shiva or Krishna. Well, it comes later on in this section that who is supreme. So the important thing is what Lord Shiva says to the demigods when they approach. He says, Pranai swai praninaha panti sadhava kshana bhangurai baddha vaireshu bhuteshu mohiteshu atma mayaya. So he says, Pranai swai praninaha panti. He says, those who are devotees, pranai swai, by their own life, they protect other living entities. Pranai swai pranina panti sadha kshana bhangurai. That the devotees, knowing that this body is temporary, they use their body for the protection of others. And it says, baddha vaireshu bhuteshu. And the conditioned soul, being illusioned by illusory energy, maya, they are eternally engaged in finding faults with each other and engaged in animosity with each other. So he says that I must help these people. A devotee's life must be used in voluntarily accepting sufferings on the behalf of the conditioned souls. So this is a very important lesson that Lord Shiva gives to all of us, because he is a devotee. Vaishnavanam yatha shambhu. And he's the greatest devotee, and he's setting an example how one should lead one's life. One Srila Prabhupada's disciple was telling Prabhupada that, you know, whenever Srila Prabhupada, I see these karmis, I feel tremendous compassion in my heart. So Prabhupada said, why only sometimes?
You will always feel compassion. A devotee is paradukh dukhi. So this is a very important principle that we must voluntarily accept inconvenience on the basis on behalf of others. So it is explained that just like a parent in a house, there are some children. There are some children who are constantly fighting with each other. And there are some children who are very decent and they are taking responsibility of the children, the other younger ones. So when the parents see that, they feel tremendous love for the child. So also Krishna is very pleased when he sees some living entity undertakes austerities or sufferings on behalf of others. So therefore, Krishna says in the Gita, Yetu dharmamritam idam, yatoktam paryupasade, shraddhana mat parama, that a person who undertakes sufferings for educating others in Krishna consciousness, explaining the science of Krishna consciousness to others, is very, very dear to me. Bhaktasthetiva me priya is extremely dear to me. And this is also the nature of Prahlad. He speaks this verse. Naivo dvije paraduratya vaitaranyas tad virya gayana mahamrita magna chitta. Shoche tato vimukha chetasa indriyarthan maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimudan. So he says that naivo dvije paraduratya vaitaranyas, that I don't have any desire to come to the spiritual world. I don't have any desire to get liberation. I simply want to stay here till I see that every living entity in this world who is conditioned, who has turned his face away from you, is delivered. I want to see them delivered and only then come to your abode. So this was Prahlad Maharaj's mood. And we can see that even here, while in bad association of all the demons in the school, he's preaching Krishna conscious philosophy to others. So this is the nature of a devotee, that he undertakes suffering for the purpose of others. So then finally Lakshmi appears. Lakshmi appears and all the demigods and the demons receive her with great admiration. The demigods make her sit on a throne and, you know, give her abhishek and they respect her, giving her worship. And finally, Lakshmi, she was looking for a husband. So she's along with her a garland, she was looking out for the perfect person. And it's explained that there was no one she could find fit. All the demons were having some problem and all the demigods were also having some fault. So finally, they explained that she saw Ajita, Supreme Lord, and she went and garlanded him. Very important instruction here, very important lesson we can learn here, that how we should be so humble. That the demigods are having so much of faults, then what to speak of us? When the demigods, when they get angry, they get cursed to become human beings. You become a human being and suffer there. Therefore, Urvashi, she got cursed from the heavens and she came to live in the earth planet. So what to speak of the conditioned soul who is so proud of his body? A little bit beauty, a little bit intelligence, and he becomes very proud. Here, all the demons were embarrassed to see that they were not selected. And Lord Krishna was selected. They became very embarrassed and morose. It's humbling, isn't it? So we have to be humble. Therefore, in Garuda Purana, it is explained that the living entity is so much conditioned that his body is so horrible that every day he has to go to the privy and he has to pass abominable substances from his body. It is so abominable that he has to take shelter of a privy. He has to go inside, away from others, and secretly do these things of passing. Why? Because it's humbling. It's humbling to see that his body is emanating all these foul substances. But still, when he comes out, he takes a bath and he feels very proud of his body. Just see, I've got such a beautiful body. Just see, I'm so amazing, I'm so intelligent. Yeah, this is the nature of the conditioned soul. The Garuda Purana says like this. It's so abominable. It is humble in the privy. The moment he comes out, he says, just see, I'm so amazing. So this is the unfortunate situation. So therefore, this ego of a conditioned soul is that he cannot see his own faults. But he sees faults in others. Just like, Sometimes, you know, people have bad breath, isn't it? And the strange part about it is that people who have bad breath, they really don't know that they have a bad breath. They have to be told, Prabhu, you need a... Now, imagine, I mean, the nose is just not even an inch further away from the mouth, isn't it? It's that close. But still, you cannot get the bad breath. Others have to tell you. This is the nature of illusion. That you cannot see your faults. I still remember when I used to come from playing, you know, and my aunt or someone would say, she go take a bath. And I said, why? And I would switch on the television and start watching. You're smelling all over. Smell? Absolutely no. Nothing. It's ego. But we can find immediately this, the, you know, other's body smelling and all these. Why? Because of the false ego. So therefore, one has to be, a devotee means, he has to be humble enough to see that he's got so many faults. And overlook others' faults because he has got many. Therefore, it is said, Radha Gopinath Prabhu was telling a very nice one-liner. He says that judge yourself by your motivations and others by their actions. Others by their motivations and you yourself by your actions. By your motivation, sorry. So therefore, we have to be very careful that we don't find faults with others but ourselves. And that way we will improve. That is the way of making advancement. So, later on, the pastime goes ahead. I'm skipping certain parts, highlighting on certain parts, where Lord Shiva, he's now in turn approaching Krishna. Later on, the nectar comes out and Lord Krishna delivers it to the demons in the form of Mohini Murthy. He delivers it to the demigods. And so at that time, after everything was settled, Lord Shiva approached Lord Krishna. And he said that, I have seen all the incarnations of the Lord, but I have not seen this incarnation of Mohini Murthy. I have seen everything, but I have not seen this. So therefore, I desire to see this form. So please, can you show me this form? So as we know that Mohini Murthy was an incarnation of the Lord to bewilder the demons. And it is explained that many times the Lord takes incarnations to bewilder the conditioned souls. So what are the incarnations which the Lord takes to bewilder? It is explained in the Padma Puran. There is a verse. It says, Abhartam Shruti Vakyanam Darshyan Loka Garhitam Swakarma Rupatyajya Tvam Atraiva Pratipadyate. So in the Padma Puran is explained that the Lord has taken incarnation. For example, the Lord took the incarnation of Shankaracharya in order to bewilder the conditioned soul by misinterpreting the Vedas and falsely telling the people to renounce their duties and confusing them about the identity of the soul with the super soul. This was Shankaracharya's job. And also there are other incarnations like Buddha, who also appeared to confuse and bewilder the conditioned souls to another path, to separate the devotees from the demons. And it is not surprising, as Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, that how the scientists are bewildered through atheistic principles. It is not surprising because it is the Lord's arrangement that anyone who is against the purpose of the Lord confuses them with a philosophy by which they can carry on with their materialism. That's how it is. Just like, you know, there are so many atheistic philosophers, even in India, who propose this theory of chemical evolution and, you know, how there's no past life, there's no next life. Like Charvaka says, you know, that, what is that verse Charvaka says? Yava jivet sukham jivet rinam kritva kritam bibet. Kaspan bhutasya dehasya kutapunar avartano bhavet. He's saying that, you know, as long as you live, just borrow but drink ghee. Who has seen whether there is life after death? No one has seen. You just continue with your life. Just live luxuriously. So this is the philosophy. You know, there was one philosopher, another thinker who asked Prabhupada that, what is this? a philosopher from India is telling to borrow and drink ghee. This is not expected of India. Prabhupada said, because he's Indian thinker, philosopher, he's at least saying borrow and drink ghee. He's not telling borrow and drink alcohol. This is culture. See? This is culture. Borrow and drink what? Ghee. It's not so bad after all. So people have, whatever they want, they get that philosophy. So that is the Lord's arrangement. So it is explained that Gautam, Kapila, Brihaspati, Charvak and Buddhists, they are all Buddha, they are all the incarnations of the Lord in order to bewilder the conditioned souls. So much so that even Lord Shiva is dressing himself up in snakes and, all these things and putting ash over his body that people sometimes make fun of him. They say, bam bole means, he's like a dull person. He's married and he still cannot, he's not working to support his wife and family. He's not having a house, living under a tree. It's foolish. They say like that sometimes. Even Bhrigu, he offended Lord Shiva saying that he don't embrace me because you're so filthy. You're covering yourself with all this ash from the graveyard. But it is the Lord's intention, motivation to actually bewilder the people in order to deliver them from the conditioned existence. So it's a very important idea that if we are not careful, then the Lord will make arrangement to bewilder us and we will not even know that we are bewildered. So this is very important. So Lord Shiva, he went to the Lord for seeing the Mohini Murti form. So the Lord, when he saw Shiva, he started smiling. And it is explained why the Lord smiled, because he was contemplating how I can bewilder Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva's wife is Parvati. She's in charge of the whole material creation. She's the most beautiful, but she cannot bewilder Lord Shiva. So there has to be something greater than her in order to bewilder him. So the Lord, while contemplating, he disappeared and he appeared as Mohini. So Lord Shiva was very convinced that when Mohini appeared, even the demigods had not been bewildered. It was only the demons who had got bewildered. And they gave the poison to Mohini, saying that you please, do whatever you feel fit. You give the poison to whoever you feel, because they wanted to impress her. So the demigods are not bewildered, absolutely. So Lord Shiva thought, if the demigods are not bewildered, how can I be bewildered? No problem. I think I should take a look. So, parallelly, sometimes this tendency to take a look at Maya is very dangerous. We have to be careful. When I was in Puri, Indradumna Maharaj was just giving a lecture and he was telling that when you're out on the streets, you see these billboards. And sometimes you may think, just take a look what's going on in the material world. And then you look at one and then you think, oh, that's good. Well, let's look at the other one. That seems interesting. And then you look at another and then you third. And the whole journey goes in just looking at the billboards. It's like a movie you're seeing. Entertaining journey. So he gave a formula that if you look at a billboard once, that's okay. But if you look at it again, that's insincerity. And if you look at it third time, then it's a fall down. It's a formula. So therefore, it's very dangerous to try to take a look at how Maya is. Because sometimes it may happen, devotees are spending so much of time in devotees association, and sometimes Maya just goes away, just leaves us for some time. And you think, wow, we are more or less liberated, isn't it? There's no Maya. Let's take a look at how it is. And I had that personal experience when I went home to visit my parents. I just thought, let's check out what's going on in the television. And, it's too much of Maya, so I won't see anything. I'll just see National Geography. And switched it on. And what I saw was some penguins in Antarctica. And I thought, wow. And I started thinking, how do these people charge their cameras in Antarctica? Now, that was the thought which came in. So I thought that became inquisitive. So I just continued watching. And then they were showing the penguin is walking on the ice caps, polar ice caps. And then he jumps into the water. And then the camera follows the penguin underwater. I'm saying, that's amazing. And then he comes out of the water and starts walking again. The camera is shooting him there and left, right, from all different angles, from the top, from left. And I, being a having some technical background, I was thinking, how do they do that? Amazing. And it ended up that 3-4 hours, I'm just watching National Geography, how penguins are mating and having children and how they are having a social life and how on the ice caps. At the end of it, I realized, this is Maya. I just got caught into it, just watching some penguins, and if I have to die now, I'll be born as a penguin. It's that dangerous. The power of Maya is all there in that one idiot box. The Mohini Murthy form is actually present today in the form of a television. Because once you get hooked, you are hooked. And then I realized, thank God I'm a brahmachari. There's no facility for any television here. There's no use of getting entangled. So therefore, devotees who are in such an environment and association must be very careful that accidentally trying to check out what is Maya, they may just get completely swooped in it and may completely give up Krishna consciousness, or may for the time being be lost. So Maya may come in so many forms. Some people say, TV? We don't have TV. No, TVs are very bad. But then they have the internet. And then they're caught up in the internet and the broadband and then browsing, and so much time goes. So it's another form of Maya. Maya knows how to capture us. So therefore, it's very important to be very careful. Maya may come in many forms. So, Mohini Murthy, she appears, and it is explained that when Lord incarnated as Mohini, the female form of the Lord is more beautiful than Lakshmi. That is his potency. That even Lakshmi is not as beautiful as the form of a woman when Lord incarnates as a woman. So, the Lord disappeared, and immediately in front of Lord Shiva and his wife and all his followers, Mohini appeared playing with a ball. And when Lord Shiva looks at the form of Mohini, he completely is bewildered. And leaving his wife aside and his followers, he goes chasing behind Mohini. And the Lord, on purpose, starts running through the forests where Lord Shiva's devotees are meditating on the Lord for sense control. And they are meditating on Lord Shiva, and there is some hustle and bustle. And they open their eyes and to find Mohini running. And then they find their Lord and Master also running behind. And they're bewildered. What's happening here? And later on, it is explained that the Lord Shiva came back to his senses and realized that the Lord had completely bewildered him. But he was not at all ashamed. He was very proud that the person who bewildered him is none other than the Supreme Lord himself. And therefore the confusion, who is supreme, which arose in the hearts of the people who were reading this section, when all the demigods led by Lord Krishna to Lord Shiva, was settled in this episode when Lord Shiva was completely bewildered by Lord Krishna. So there is no confusion of who is supreme. So this is the glory of the Lord's pastimes. So therefore it is explained that the Lord sometimes bewilders. And one of the bewildering theories is, as it is explained here, the impersonalistic theory. And we may think, oh, these impersonalists are very bad. But actually, who is an impersonalist? Everyone who has some tendency to enjoy this world is an impersonalist. Like there is a pastime of Gurudas. In his book, he writes, Srila Prabhupada once told him to register ISKCON in India and to make a charter for ISKCON. So he went, made the charter, legal documents and everything, and he came back with the documents to Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada was looking through it and he was thinking, okay, fine, good. Alright, so then he came across a clause that the founder Acharya of ISKCON has all veto power. And then he looked through the documents and he said, well, where is it mentioned that the founder Acharya is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami? Show me. So then Gurudas was looking through all. No, I think it is mentioned in that clause and it has been mentioned there. And then he went through the whole document and he found that he had actually missed out the that clause. So Srila Prabhupada, so where is that clause? Who is the founder Acharya? You want to be founder Acharya? So Gurudas became very affected and he said, really? I mean, Prabhupada, that was not my intention. I don't want to be founder Acharya. I just want to be a servant. He says, no, you want to be founder Acharya? Go get it rectified and come. And then he became very saddened at heart that Prabhupada doubted his motivation. But he went out, made the changes and brought it back. And for 3 days, Srila Prabhupada didn't speak to him. He was very silent, didn't speak to him anything. And then later on, he called him and then said that, you know, I just gave you this, I wanted to teach you a very important lesson. You should not be careless. Carelessness is also a form of impersonalism. When we are careless, we are actually making an impersonal treatment, giving impersonal treatment to others. Which also shows it's a tendency, it's arising from the tendency to enjoy this world and become gods. When you're not in the mood of a servant, you treat others as servants and don't care about their necessities. And you overlook those necessities. It's very important that we keep this in mind and be very attentive in dealings. So, how is it that a great Supreme Lord like Lord Shiva himself was bewildered? And how come that a small child like him was having the understanding of the soul and God? It's only because of the grace of the Lord. So when the Lord gives the blessings, we can understand it. So therefore it is said in the Shastra, Mam hi partha vipashrite yepisyu papa yone striya vaishyastada shudras. That even a woman or a shudra or anyone who is incapable or underqualified to accept Krishna consciousness can also accept it. Prabhupada says even a dog can take part in the chanting of the holy names. This happens through the mercy of the Lord. Just recently, you know, some of our devotees were in the farm and they were telling a very interesting episode which took place with their dog in the farm. There was a dog in the farm. And it was a wonderful devotee dog. Whenever there was a Bhagavatam class, it would come and sit in the class. And it would never eat meat. It would only eat cabbages or some vegetables. Very amazing dog. And whenever devotees would come, he would feel very happy. Would play with the devotees. And so much so that they thought it's a dog. So they even brought a mate for it. But he was not interested. Amazing characteristics for a dog. And finally what happened, its time came, it was about to die. It was in its cage, and when it wanted to die, it somehow or another forcibly opened the cage and came out of the cage and then died in the association of devotees. It never could open its door, that's what devotees were saying, but somehow it opened the door and came out and died in the association of devotees. And what was the time when it died? Somewhere around 10, 10:30, when actually in the farm 10, 10:30 means midnight. 10, 10:30 means all are sleeping, fast asleep. But somehow or another, by the Lord's arrangement on that day, the devotees were doing something. And, you know, they were awake. And this dog came and started breathing very heavily. And all the devotees together, they were chanting for this dog. For a dog. I mean, and not just chanting, they brought this garland, Mahagarland from Jagannath. They had attended this Palghar ceremony, Snan Yatra. And they had brought Mahagarland, Mahawater, isn't it? And they put the garland on the dog. They put Tulsi and Gangajal in the water of the dog. And the chanting Hare Krishna for this dog, the dog left its body. So we can see that even a dog can get mercy, isn't it? Even a child can understand a dog. Animals are getting mercy in Krishna conscious movement. It is a fact that Prabhupada says that even a dog can take part in the chanting of Hare Krishna. But if not, if we are not accessing the mercy, then we will lose mercy. We will be covered. Therefore Krishna says in the Gita, Naham prakash sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. To understand the soul, to understand God, is not within our hands, it's in Krishna's hand. And Krishna says, Naham prakash sarvasya. I don't reveal myself to others. It's like being covered by a blanket. And that's why, you know, sometimes in a hostel, I still remember, there are people, you know, who used to make jokes with people, other students. So when a student would come inside the room, they would black out the room, and when a student would come, they would throw a blanket over him. And covered with a blanket, they would not be able to see anything, and then all the boys would start beating him, and then they would run out of the room. So when he would remove the blanket, he still can't see anyone because it's still dark in the room. So by the time he finds where the switch, everyone is gone. He doesn't know who has done it. You know, when you cover a person's head with a blanket, what happens? He can't see you. But the thing is that even you can't see him. Isn't it? When you cover a person, you can't see him and he can't see you. But Lord Krishna is explaining that when he covers you up, it's not that he cannot see you. He can see you properly. Therefore, in the Gita, it is explained, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samarata. That I cover you up. Yoga Maya Samavrita. I'm covering up with my potency those people who are trying to understand me. But next verse he says, Vedaham Samatitani Vartamani Charjuna Bhavishyani Chabhutani Mamtu Vedana Kashyana. That I am the knower of past, present and future. That means he knows everything about the soul who has been covered. So this example of being covered with a blanket is not appropriate. Should be something like a camera. Like, you know, when we are sitting here, there's a camera here in this, watching all of us. Now, anyone logged on to the internet can see who all are sitting here. But we cannot see the person. Like, even when we move around in the temple hall, you know, there are surveillance cameras in every part of the temple. You can't understand who's seeing. But there in the thing, Gokulanand or whoever, Gopijana Valaprabhu is sitting secretly watching who's doing what. And if you watch on the television, it's quite amazing to see that how people are, what people are doing. I mean, nothing, but you know, just something like, you know, scratching the back or, you know, making dhoti all right. Something people do which they wouldn't do in public. Isn't it? Why? Because they feel that they're not being watched. Isn't it? So it's amazing to actually see that. If you can sit on the television somewhere, you can see all the different devotees doing, because they forget that they're being watched. So also, this very important principle of that, to be honest. Honesty means what? To always know that you are being watched. Not simply to do things because someone is keeping a watch on you, but do things even though you are not being watched. So, therefore, we have to beg the mercy of the Lord. And how do we do that? By chanting Hare Krishna. So to explain that we are not on that level to always do the right things when we are not being watched. Therefore, to chant the Lord's glory in the association of devotees is the Sankirtan movement. To chant, chant, chant in the association of devotees. And that is the way how we can access the Lord's mercy and come to the understanding of who God is, who Krishna is, and who is the soul. That is the right process. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So it's a little late, but anyone wants to make any comments and any questions? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. There is an announcement from the base.